You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire. The scope of Iran-linked APT-33 cyber attacks has been revealed. GandCrab criminals are using more sophisticated tactics. A new type of malware was using Slack to communicate. Chrome gets an important update. Huawei sues the U.S. and Germany sets tougher security rules for telecom companies. And people who invest in cryptocurrency often don't know what they're getting into. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, March 7th, 2019. Microsoft told the Wall Street Journal that an Iranian cyber attack campaign hit more than 200 companies over the past 2 years, causing hundreds of millions of dollars in damages. The attacks targeted oil and gas companies and heavy machinery makers in a number of countries, including Saudi Arabia, Germany, the United Kingdom, India, and the U.S. The group sent phishing emails to more than 2,200 people at these companies. Microsoft attributes the attack to Holmium, also known as APT-33. The group has been active since at least 2013 and has a history of going after organizations in the aviation and energy sectors. CrowdStrike says criminals using GandCrab ransomware have exhibited a recent shift in tactics. They're now using techniques more often associated with nation-state APT groups, such as manual lateral movement within networks. These observations are consistent with a recent advertising campaign by GandCrab's developer, Pinchy Spider, which was aimed at individuals with knowledge of remote desktop protocol, virtual network computing, and corporate networking. The shift in tactics suggests that Pinchy Spider and its affiliates are hoping to maximize their revenue by launching the type of low-volume, high-return attacks used by sophisticated threat actors. This strategy, which the CrowdStrike researchers call big game hunting, in which threat actors hack into an organization's network and manually deploy the malware. This method is far more effective at getting victims to pay up than widespread, untargeted ransomware campaigns, but it requires a great deal of technical skill. Threat groups using SamSam, BitPamer, and Ryuk ransomware have been observed using these tactics very effectively. GandCrab differs from the ransomware used in those attacks, however, because it requests a ransom payment for each individual infected machine, rather than asking for a lump sum in exchange for decrypting all of an organization's computers. Email account takeover is a tried-and-true method for bad actors to gain access to your data and your network. Asaf Sadone is Vice President of Email Security at Barracuda Networks, and he joins us with the details.
The most common way is to actually phish one of the employees. So to send an employee a phishing email with a link that looks like a sign-in page to a real service, but in fact is just, you know, a website owned by the attacker. So a lot of folks would receive emails impersonating, you know, Microsoft Outlook or Gmail or perhaps, you know, DocuSign or Dropbox. Another way is by basically buying the credential from someone else. So once, you know, credentials are stolen, they then get sold oftentimes in the black market. So in the dark web. And so you have this kind of multi-tiered economy of criminals where, you know, one set of criminals is just harvesting credentials, then they sell off the credentials to another set of criminals that then might pursue a much more targeted attack against a specific organization.
Now, if I fall victim to this, if someone takes over my account, would I necessarily know right away that something has happened?
No, not necessarily. And this is what makes these accounts so nefarious. So most employees don't actually notice that their account has been taken over. And in fact, attackers take several steps to kind of hide their activity. So one common thing attackers do is they will set up a forwarding rule from that employee's mailbox to forward all the emails externally. So they don't even need to log in anymore to that account, not to trigger any kind of suspicious IP logins. And then even when they launch an actual email campaign from that employee's account, you know, sometimes they will actually delete those emails from the sent to items email folder so that the employee won't notice them. And they might even delete any of the responses really quickly when they get received. So we do hypothesize that some of these attackers actually run scripts on the accounts to immediately delete the emails from the sent items folder and immediately delete the replies to the attack. So that's kind of the more sophisticated attackers.
And is it a typical situation that an organization will have not as stringent security when things are coming from inside the organization?
Absolutely. In fact, the vast majority of email security systems, including, you know, the ones available on the, you know, on the popular, you know, email providers like Office 365, they don't even scan or even have the ability to scan for internal emails. Hmm. So the common architecture of email security is they sit between the outside world and the mail server. So they only observe, you know, traffic from the outside coming in or from the inside coming out, but they have no ability to peek into internal traffic. And so this is what makes, you know, these attacks highly successful is they're basically, you know, running unimpeded. There's nobody really inspecting emails coming from internal sources. And so that's what makes these attacks really dangerous.
And so what are your recommendations for people and organizations to protect themselves against these sorts of things?
From kind of the most sophisticated side, there are actually now solutions that use artificial intelligence to detect anomalies in internal employee traffic that basically learns, you know, over time, what's a normal pattern of communication for an employee? You know, how do they normally communicate with colleagues? How, you know, what IPs do they log into? What are the inbox forwarding rules they have on their account? And then we look for, you know, any, you know, malicious activity or anomalous activity on any one of these signals. Another good idea is to apply multi-factor authentication. Unfortunately, multi-factor authentication is not an end-all, kind of not a full solution to this problem. We've actually seen attackers bypass multi-factor authentication by harvesting the SMS code as well as the credential mm-hmm. with a fake login page. But still, it makes the life of attackers harder, and definitely a good idea to set it up on all the important SaaS and email systems of an internal organization. Hmm. And then finally, the last step is probably awareness. So you can run security awareness campaigns to actually simulate these types of attacks and anytime anybody that's doing any type of financial transaction or dealing with HR information, you know, I would recommend the old-fashioned way of person to person. You know, you're about to send someone a file with a lot of, you know, W-2s. It's probably not a bad idea to just verify the email actually came from them, or to get on the phone with them and verify that they actually need it, and to see if it's the correct email address, right? Right. So anytime you're, you know, so that's more like internal procedures. And, you know, that's always just really important as well, on top of all the security measures.
That's Asaf Sadon from Barracuda Networks. Researchers at Trend Micro this morning described a new type of information gathering malware that communicates with an attacker via a Slack channel. The malware is spread through watering hole attacks, potentially targeting people who are interested in political activities. Once it finds itself on a system, it runs a downloader, which downloads a backdoor. This backdoor embeds two authorization tokens, allowing it to communicate with the Slack API. It then downloads a file from GitHub and parses it for commands. The output of each command is sent to a private Slack channel where the attacker can read it. The primary target of the malware appears to be the victim's personal communications, and it goes after platforms like Twitter and Skype. The researchers have named the malware Slub because it makes use of Slack and GitHub. They don't know who is behind Slub because the attackers were very good at covering their tracks. Notably, the researchers haven't seen any related attacks in the past, and they've been unable to find any similar malware samples. They believe with strong confidence that it was part of a possible targeted attack campaign, noting that the attackers, who were very sophisticated, clearly showing a strong interest in person-related information. Google's latest Chrome update contains a patch for a high-severity use-after-free vulnerability that's being actively exploited in the wild. The bug is in the browser's File Reader API, which allows Chrome to access local files. Details of the flaw are being kept under wraps until enough users have updated, but Chrome's security and desktop engineering lead said in a tweet, "Seriously, update your Chrome installs, like, right this minute." TechCrunch notes that Huawei filed its lawsuit against the U.S. federal government last night, claiming the ban on its products from government use is unconstitutional. Huawei is arguing that Congress violated the Constitution's Bill of Attainder clause by specifically naming the company. The clause forbids legislation that targets a particular person or entity without trial. Most observers doubt Huawei will win the case. Earlier today, Germany's Federal News Agency set stricter security requirements for all telecom equipment vendors, rather than singling out Chinese companies. Under the new rules, critical network equipment will only be used after examination and certification by Germany's BSI Information Security Agency, which assisted in drafting the guidelines. A full version of the requirements will be published later this spring. Facebook has joined Google in rejecting an Australian regulator's proposal that the government oversee how major tech firms rank news articles and advertisements. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission says that companies like Google and Facebook, quote, increasingly perform similar functions as media businesses, end quote, so similar rules should apply. A spokeswoman for Facebook said the proposed level of regulatory intervention was unprecedented. The UK's Financial Conduct Authority published research today warning consumers to exercise prudence when it comes to cryptocurrency. The research consists of two surveys which found that many consumers overestimate their knowledge of crypto assets. They often perceive cryptocurrencies as a way to get rich quick and feel like they're investing in tangible assets. One of the surveys found that 1 in 6 consumers hadn't completed any research on the topic before buying cryptocurrencies. And joining me once again is David DeFore. He's Vice President of Engineering and Cybersecurity at WebRoot, and he is coming to us live from RSA Conference. David, having a good time out there, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, it can be a little hectic, especially once you're on day 4, but yeah, things are going pretty good.
What are you seeing out there? What's your take on the show this year?
Well, I got to tell you, David, I've got some really good news for your listeners, because it seems like everything has absolutely been automated, integrated, simplified, and they're using pervasive, predictive, zero trust AI threat detection security analytics. And so it sounds like they're making it so we can stay connected longer, innovate faster, and then stay online safely while we digitally transform our organizations. So I'm feeling like, David, I feel like we fixed it. It's over. We can just check off cybersecurity. It's done.
Gonna say, no need for a conference next year, right? Well, we got this solved.
I've been talking to some folks, and we're thinking next year we'll just have a big party to, you know, kind of as a going away, because we've got it figured out.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. All right. Well, besides all of those marketing messages, what's the real scoop? What's your sense of where we stand this year?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things really sticking out, because they're not here, and we're not seeing a lot of discussion on blockchain. I mean, last few years, there's been a ton of talk about blockchain and things like that. So I think the lack of noise on that is kind of interesting, and maybe people are realizing that's more of a management audit tool and not something that's in the near term going to be huge in security.
Hmm. So this has sort of lost its buzzword status.
Yeah, it has, for sure. You know, there's still, everybody's got their AI and ML, which is going to save the day. But some really interesting things that we're seeing discussion is a lot of talk about privacy versus security, and how a lot of the things that are making us protect our privacy online are affecting our ability with a lot of the tools we have to actually do security. So, for example, if you're doing maybe I'm picking on HTTPS here, if you have a secure connection from your PC to a server on the internet, your organization isn't able to look at that traffic and not in a way to see what you're doing, but in a way to see where you're going. And a lot of the tools need to be able to monitor that traffic to make sure the bad guys aren't injecting things in that network flow.
So security giveth, security taketh away.
That's exactly right. And I think, I don't know that there's really any answers, but it's nice to see a discussion around how do we find that balance of ensuring people have their privacy, because I'm a huge privacy advocate. But there's got to be some balance where we can ensure people have their privacy, but we're also building the tools we need that'll protect us.
Yeah, it definitely seems like privacy is certainly getting a brighter light shown on it than it has in years past. I'm wondering, what do you see walking around in terms of diversity, people of color? Are we seeing a better representation there?
You know, I gotta say we are. I've seen a couple of groups that are from different countries, you know, there's an African group, and then folks from the Middle East. So we're seeing from different locations, some South American organizations as well. You know, the countries have their booth, but in general, there's more diversity now. Am I going to say it's diverse? You know, this can be, you know, kind of a slanted show, but I've been going 6 years. They gave me a little badge, thing for my badge. It says Loyalty Plus, you know, I guess I'm some RSA, loyalty person now. And I have to say it's getting better. We have a long way to go though, but it's nice to see inroads being made and a lot of attention being paid to diversity.
What is your sense in terms of overall tone, people's spirits? Are people feeling, do you sense that there's a feeling of optimism?
Well, I think there's a more of a feeling of pragmatism, where I think a couple of years ago we were going to, you know, fix all the world's problems. But where we've landed now is, what are the things we can do? How do we do it better? How do we try to make things a little more simpler for people? But I think there's an idea around, how do we start simplifying stuff for folks? So pragmatism with the hope of simplifying.
And what are you seeing in terms of folks coming up to the Webroot booth and asking questions? Are you getting good leads, smart questions from people?
So what's ironic, we don't get a lot of leads in terms of, you know, new business here. We have a lot of partnerships. It's good for meeting those folks. But we do get a lot of questions, and it allows us to really put our finger on the pulse of what people are wondering about. And endpoint has been a really big topic. You know, We had some EDR for a while where you know, companies were focused on, you know, the detection component, but people are really looking for holistic solutions that actually remove or threats if they get on the machine as well. So there's a lot of talk about, you know, good old tried and true endpoint technology. And then everybody wants to talk about threat intelligence. It used to be a big buzzword, but it's kind of calmed down. But people are looking for quality threat data to do an analysis again.
All right. Well, David, safe travels home. I hope you're able to kick your feet up and relax a little bit when you get there. But in the meantime, enjoy the rest of the show.
All right. Thanks, David. It's been great being on.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.